Thanks for tuning in to this week's edition of the Portland Christian Center podcast. This week, Pastor Joel Slater shared a message titled The Blame Game. This message continues our series, The Gospel of John, and is based out of John chapter 9. Now here's Pastor Joel.
While you're there, I'm going to just talk about a few things. I'm going to try to connect the dots, first of all. Pastor Lauren last week talked about not being a slave to identity. He talked about several different threats to our identity and how we see ourselves and choosing not to be a slave to our identity, but choosing to live as a child of God. And I was sitting there listening to that, and I just enjoyed that message so much. And I was absolutely agreeing with everything he said. And I thought, you know what? I want to look at the other side of that issue. He looked at our identity, but today I want to talk about God's identity. All right, I just think the two of them are just two sides of the same coin. And at the end of the day, God's identity starts with Jesus. You got to begin, everything begins and ends with Jesus. Genesis 1 says, in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. John 1 says, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. So connect those two dots together. It begins and it's going to end with Jesus. And so if we want to know about God's identity, we've got to know Jesus. And in knowing Jesus, I believe that we're going to love him more. But we have to start with knowing Jesus. And so I want to look at the issue and the problem of God's identity. Because I think he doesn't have a problem. He doesn't have a problem with his identity. We have the problem with his identity. And everything, so much I believe that we struggle with begins and ends with this problem. We're going to look at it today. You see, as Pastor Lauren talked about being a slave to identity, he used the story of the children of Egypt. And while the people of Israel struggled to escape their identity of slaves, they struggled with understanding God's identity as well. You remember the story that they were crying out to be set free. They were crying out for God to set them free, and he did. But no sooner had they gotten what they wanted, they got to the Red Sea, and suddenly they faced a problem. Suddenly they faced an issue. Suddenly they saw the Red Sea on one side, an impassable barrier, and they saw an army that wanted to kill them on the backside. And they turned to their leader Moses, and they cried out to God and said, why have you allowed God to lead us in this place? Why have you allowed us to happen? They're talking to Moses, but Moses was God's representative. And basically, they're crying out to God saying, why have you allowed this to happen? I got a letter in the mail this last week. Yeah, a letter in the mail. The letter in the mail, no. It was from my bank. And he said, dear Mr. Slater, blah, 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 we regret to inform you, blah, 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 that apparently there has been some activity on your account and some institutions that you've used your debit card at have been, basically hacked. And we are afraid that your identity and your account might have been put a threat. So here's a new debit card, and you can change that. We think we fixed it. We think we fixed that. And please activate the card and go on your merry way. Now, I've never had that happen to me before. And it scared me to death. And the fact that they said, we think that we've taken care of the problem, didn't really help me much at all. So I activate the card and everything's fine. But I was amazed at the threat to my identity. I was amazed at the effect the threat to my identity had. But more so, I was actually amazed at the effect that my perspective on my bank's identity had. See, no longer did I trust my bank. This amazing institution, this longtime institution, if I said it, you would know it. And I figured, you guys know what you're doing. And I don't think I can trust them very much anymore. And I don't think I can trust all those institutions that I go to anymore. I mean, think about it, the gas station, the grocery store, just a few things here and there. And suddenly I find out I'm not really trusting those institutions anymore. One little poke at identity, and suddenly my security is a little bit shaken. And the one question I had to ask, and it may sound, in light of all the things that are happening, the problems in this world, the problems that are happening, I still ask the question, why me? Why me? Why did this happen to me? And I think that there are many questions in life that we struggle with, and we ask the question, why me? There are many questions in life that we struggle with finding answers. I mean, my bank wasn't going to tell me, why you? He just said, it just happened. But we ask, why me? And we struggle with finding answers. I mean, do you ever feel this way? You ever wish this was the answer? Do you ever wish the answer was this? And I saw this on Facebook, and I just had to grab it because I said, yes, that's the answer that I want. That's the answer. I grabbed the picture and I had it put up on the screen. This is my heart's cry. Sometimes I just want someone to hug me and say, I know it's hard, You're going to be okay. Here's a cup of coffee and $5 million. I wish that was the answer to life. I wish that was the answer to life, but I've got this sneaky feeling that that's not what's going to happen. I got a feeling that that's not the answer, and that frustrates me. I'm sure it might frustrate you too. And I wonder, isn't it frustrating that there are no easy answers? I mean, we get advertised with, you know, the easy button. You know, don't you wish you had the easy button? But there are no easy answers. I wonder why we think that way. I wonder why we assume that there's going to be an easy answer or there's going to be an easy button. I think it's a few things. One of the things is that I think it's very easy for us nowadays to find out anything about anything and anyone. I mean, think about it. You can go on Google and you can ask any question you want and not just get thousands, not just 10,000, but hundreds of thousands of answers, can't you? And better yet, you can pick the answer. In fact, Google is so smart that you don't even have to think of the question. It'll think of the question for you. And so we find it's just amazing that I can access anything and I can find out anything about anything through Google. And then and then about people, you can find out anything about anyone. You can see someone and all you need is a first name, and maybe I'm just not smart enough. You might not even need that, but you can just find a face and a name and you can find out everything about them through Facebook. I mean, you can find out anything about anything or anyone. Now, what is not easy, here's the part where it starts getting hard. It's not easy in coming to grips with our limitations on knowing, or better yet, understanding. In fact, we hate not knowing anything. You hate not being able to access information. You hate not having an explanation. And just to kind of help you understand how much you hate it, I've asked the media department to shut down the Wi-Fi signal for the rest of the service. Yeah, see? Right there. Somebody, whoa, you're going too far there, Pastor. You hate not knowing what's going on. And when we don't like what's going on, we react. Like I said, I could not believe how I reacted to finding out about my identity through my bank and how it felt about my bank. But we react. And at the least, when we don't know what's going on, we become noncommittal. When we don't like what is said about us or said to us on Facebook, we unfriend. We become noncommittal. You're not my friend anymore. Or we don't like what's stated, and someone takes a strong opinion on Twitter, and so what do? We just unfollow. We just unfollow. We just become noncommittal. We pull back. But I think there's a slow burn problem, that the more and more we don't know, and the more and more we resent not knowing, or the more and more we resent not liking what we know, there becomes a slow burn result, and we're seeing this, especially with our young people, and that's why I'm glad our young people continually are here at Portland Christian Center, because I've seen this trend, and my heart is becoming more and more concerned, and so I want you young people to really grab hold of this, but I think that anyone who has a young adult in their life, anyone who has been a young adult, you may have struggled with this issue. This is for you today. And that we see a slow burn result, that when we don't like what we see and we can't understand or explain what we see and we face the limitations of our understanding, we're actually seeing a growing society in our country of atheists, people who are choosing to walk away and reject God completely. And why is that? Because we cannot reconcile the tension, and there is a tension, and it's a growing tension, between the unexplainable and the undeniable. That we can't reconcile this tension between what we can't explain and what we see in front of us. The strange thing about this tension is that in almost every other part of our life, we don't live that way. We don't let it bother us. Honestly, can you explain how a cell phone really works? Can you really say that you push the button, you talk through the phone, it converts voice into electrons that go to a tower, that go to another tower, and that you can literally talk to people around the world? Can you explain how that works? No. Most of us can't, and yet we don't deny that we use them. We don't deny that we trust them. We don't deny that we depend on them. Has anyone flown an airplane? You've flown in an airplane. Can you explain how an airplane flies? Can you explain how air gets sucked in the front and then squirted out the back and lifts you up, and you put your life in the lives of people you've never met, interviewed, or know, and a machine that you didn't kick the tires and check the oil on, and you're going to stick your life into this aluminum tube and go across the country that you don't need to have everything explained for you to believe in something, do you? No, we do it every day. So my question to you on this, on the big things of life, on the grand things of life, why is it that we believe in some things without understanding everything about them, but with other things, we feel like we need an explanation? I think it's a game we play. I think it's a game we play. We dance around the issue. It's a game we play. But I'm going to tell you today that if you're looking for explanations for everything, and you will stomp your feet and dig your heels in and even pull away and start kind of copping an attitude with God, because I'm not going to believe into you until you explain some of these things to me, understand it's a game that we're not going to play. It's a game that we're not going to win. Understand that smart people know not to play this game. Smart people know not to play the game. In fact, smart people make an intentional choice. They make an intentional choice to depend on the undeniable rather than flail with the unexplainable. They make a conscious choice to depend on what is undeniable. And I think that there's probably no greater issue that affects our misunderstanding of God, that affects our perception of who God is and places limitations on our faith than the problem of suffering. The problem of suffering. You know suffering. You're seeing it. Just yesterday, I just went on for a minute and saw the news and 7.8 magnitude earthquake in Nepal. Unbelievable pain and suffering. But you don't have to look to Nepal. You can look in our own backyard. You can look. You heard the motivation for Royal Family Kids Camp and why we spend nearly $50,000 a year on this camp, because there is unexplainable suffering. I cannot understand how anybody would harm a child. You can't give me any good reason for that. And we wrestle with this tension. I can't believe in a God who would allow such suffering to continue. Nikki Gumbel, who developed the Alpha Course, which we use to help people explore faith and have their, and it's actually how an opportunity for them to get to ask the questions about faith that they've been wrestling with, wrote this. He said, "The fact of suffering undoubtedly constitutes the single greatest challenge to the Christian faith, and has been in every generation. It's not a new problem. Its distribution and degree appear to be entirely random and therefore unfair." And you all know what I'm talking about. In our church family, we have seen unexplained, unfair suffering. Spouses who have gone too soon, people who have lost babies, people who have served faithfully and yet have been afflicted with diseases. You've seen it. You've known it. People that have suffered mental, physical, emotional, sexual abuse. A local college student commented, "This isn't a philosophical issue for me. This is personal. I won't believe in a God who allows suffering, even if he, she, it exists. Maybe God exists, but maybe not. But if he does, he can't be trusted." See, there's the slow burn. There's the slow burn. Where we can't reconcile the unexplainable with the undeniable. But let me ask you this. If you've ever felt this way, if ever you've thought that you're not bad, you're not wrong, it's normal. And if you have felt this way, and it's caused you or someone you know to pull away from faith, or if you're being tempted to step away from faith, can I just encourage you just to pause for a minute? Can I just encourage you just to hold off on that for one more minute? And honestly, I'm so glad that you're here. You've been on my heart and my mind, because I've been wanting to address this issue for a long, long time. And I want to ask you the question, if that's you today, if you have felt the desire to pull back from faith, if you have allowed your view of God to be distorted to the point that you want to pull back, let me ask you a few questions. Have such thoughts led you anywhere better than where you started? Has that feeling to pull away from God, to start doubting God, to start denying who Jesus undeniably is, has that helped at all? Has that honestly helped? Have such thoughts or feelings made the unexplainable? Has it answered all those questions, you know, about suffering, about innocent suffering? Has that answered any of your questions? Has it made the unexplainable understandable? Has it made the insufferable more tolerable? Has it made the painful more manageable? The question I want to ultimately ask you today, if nothing else, if you don't remember anything else, is will we spend our lives finding fault or finding faith? Will we spend our lives poking holes in faith, which ultimately will be digging us into a hole? Will we spend our lives finding fault or finding faith? Because when we're confronted with some unexplainable issues or uncomfortable truths, we have a choice to make, and you have a choice to make today. And the question and the choice is this: will I endure the discomfort and uncertainty of my limited understanding long enough to pursue what is true? And it may take a while. It may not be that easy answer. But will I endure the discomfort and uncertainty of my limited understanding long enough to look and find what is true? Or will I retreat to the shadows of what I know, what I like, what I prefer, what makes me comfortable, even if it's not true? Now, before you begin with your mental arguments, can I just challenge you again to begin your search with Jesus? Can I encourage you to begin your search with Jesus and take into account that if he is who he said he is, if he is the Son of God, if he is who he said he is, then we have to take everything he said seriously. And I guarantee that if you will focus on pursuing truth, you'll never regret it. My life verse is, you will know the truth, and the truth will set you free. It's my life verse, and I found that to be the most powerful statement in my entire life. When I didn't understand why I behaved a certain way, or what was the deep motivation of my life, or why would this happen to me, I never really get all my answers. But when I've looked at Jesus, I said, okay, I may not have all the answers to the unexplainable, but there are some things that are undeniable. And interestingly, as we look at John's gospel, especially the story that we're going to look at here in this moment, one of the reasons that Jesus came was to show us who God is. Was his job was to take the unexplainable and through his life make God's true identity undeniable. So look with me in John chapter 9, verse 1 and 2 for a few minutes. It's one of my favorite stories. And as you're finding your place in there, I want to also say, so I'm so glad that Pastor Lauren is a crier. He's a self-admitted crier. It makes me glad that we have another crier on the team. I really appreciate that. Because when I read this story, I hope I can get through it today, but every time I read this story, I don't know what it is, it makes me cry. Tears of absolute awe and wonder at who Jesus is. Look with me, verse 1 and 2. As he, Jesus, went along, he saw a man blind from birth. His disciples asked him, "Rabbi, who sinned, this man or his parents, that he was born blind?" Great question. Now, I want you to understand that this was not a random question. They weren't just trying to make conversation, but it demonstrated the dominant thinking about God in that day. And even though his disciples were Jewish, you have to understand that John's gospel is written to a Greek audience. And you can't help in your society be affected by the overwhelming beliefs of society. That's why so many of our young people are starting to walk away from faith, because the voices of society are speaking louder than the voices of truth. And so you got to see that these disciples are affected by what's going on, and we should take a word of warning from that. But the Greeks thought, they believed in God, they believed in many gods, but they saw gods, again, they twisted God's identity, and they saw the Greek gods as simply human beings but with superpowers. That their gods weren't benevolent, weren't awesome, weren't loving, caring, and gracious, but they were just human beings with lots of powers. And you can see that the disciples saw this man suffering, and they thought, you know what? Somebody's got to be at fault. Somebody made this happen. It's got to be somebody's fault. But I want you to notice that Jesus doesn't play the blame game. Jesus doesn't play that game. But he points away from finding fault towards faith. He responded, verse 3, "Neither this man nor his parents sinned, but this happened so that the works of God may be displayed in him." I love the Message version of this verse. It says, "You're asking the wrong question. You're looking for someone to blame. There is no such cause and effect here. Look instead for what God can do." In light of unexplainable, unjustifiable, unfair suffering, Jesus points out the following, that sometimes there are limits to our understanding, but our limits don't limit God. And suffering, while horrible, and you don't wish it on anyone, suffering still can provide opportunity to show what God can do. While people may look at the horrors of suffering, they also sit up and take notice when the people of God who believe in his word stand up and shine in the darkness. Convoy of Hope is moving into Nepal right now, a Christian organization that is going into the devastation. They go where no one dares go, and people sit up and take notice. Why would you go there? Why would you invest in there? Because it's what Jesus would do. No one wants to go there. There's nothing there. That's exactly why we're going, and that's exactly what we need to do. In the light of unexplainable suffering, God can use it as an opportunity. John 9:5 says this, the Message version says, for as long as I'm in the world, there's plenty of light. I am the world's light. So rather than grasping in the dark to find fault, Jesus is telling his disciples, as long as you have me with you, as long as I'm with you, let me be the one to shed light on these issues that you're wrestling with. Verses 6 and 7, he says, after saying this, in other words, he's connecting the dots between what he just said. He's saying, I am the light of the world. Let me shed light on this situation. So he's connecting. Now, after he said this, he did something. He spit on the ground, made some mud with the saliva, and put it on the man's eyes. Go, he told them, wash in the pool of Siloam. This word means sent. Now, when I see this verse, I wonder, why did Jesus do this? Why? And as I looked at this verse, it just seemed, at the end of the day, gross and unnecessary. Gross and unnecessary. Kind of like the way we feel about suffering, isn't it? It's unnecessary. But amazingly, Jesus stepped into our limited understanding and revealed himself through a tradition that I didn't know anything about, but that to the people watching was unexplainable and yet undeniable. See, the people that day had formed a tradition that said that this is weird. This is why we have to manage this tension between the unexplainable and the undeniable. That they believed that the saliva of the firstborn son of a father actually had healing properties. Weird. That is just weird. And yet the disciples believed it, the religious leaders believed it, and they said the firstborn of a son, his spit actually has healing properties. And throughout the book of John, Jesus is continually referring to his father. He's always talking about his father. I'm here to do the will of my father. My father sent me. I can only do what the father said. In fact, Jesus repeatedly identified himself with the Father. He said, the Father and I are one. If you've seen the Father, you have seen me. So everything you see me do is what the Father would do. I can only do what the Father can do, but the Father can do anything, so I can do everything. He and I are the same. You see me, you see the Father. And it's funny that the religious leaders were continually trying, even though they knew Jesus' history, they knew he was born, they knew his family, they knew where he grew up, they were continually trying to alter Jesus' identity. You're only the son of a carpenter. You're only from Nazareth. You are not who you say you are. And yet he steps in and he leverages a tradition that they do not deny, although unexplainable, and he leverages it to prove who he is. When Jesus healed the blind man, he was, I beg your pardon, spitting in the eyes of his enemies and their claims. In effect, he was saying, I am who I say I am. I am the firstborn son of my father, and whom you claim to know. You think you know who God is. Well, why aren't you believing your own eyes when in fact you have no clue? And Jesus says, I'm going to prove it to you. And verse 7, so the man went, washed, and came home seeing. That's an emphatic statement. He didn't believe he could see. He didn't say he could see. He came home and saw. It was unexplainable, but undeniable. But apparently, not so easily embraceable. And what happens when what we can't explain? It's just like we see in Scripture, verse 8 and 9. His neighbors and those who had formerly seen him begging asked, isn't this the same man who used to sit and beg? Some claimed that he was. Others said, no, he only looks like him. But he himself insisted, I am the man. Here's our problem. When we focus on the unexplainable instead of the undeniable, there will never be enough information to satisfy us. It is a bottomless hole that we will never be able to fill to our satisfaction. Verse 13, they brought to the Pharisees the man who had been blind. Now, the day on which Jesus had made the mud and opened the man's eyes was a Sabbath. Now, I find it interesting that John included this detail because we see Jesus, whom we know as God, not doing what we would normally do, and in this case, keep the rules. Verse 15, therefore, the Pharisees also asked him how he had received his sight. He put mud on my eyes, the man replied, and I washed, and now I see. Some of the Pharisees said, obviously this man can't be from God. He doesn't keep the Sabbath. Others countered, how can a bad man do miraculous God-revealing things like this? There was a split in their ranks. See, when we think that we know so much about God, and it's amazing how much we think we know about God, and then something happens that we don't understand, our fallback is to refuse to believe. We say things in our head, maybe not out loud, but we say things in our head and through our actions. Actions speak louder than words. I can't believe in a God who allows bad things to happen. We say things like, I can't believe in a God who says no to certain things. I can't believe in a God who places limits on my freedom or allows consequences when I exercise that freedom. But the truth Jesus offers is this: you don't have to understand everything about me to believe in me. We're consumed with finding fault. We are constantly consumed with the blame game. We're consumed when we remain comfortable in our limited understanding. We get defensive. We get very defensive. It's not me, it's you. It's not my problem, it's your problem. We get consumed with finding fault when we attempt to place Jesus within those limitations as well. And Jesus is showing us that we will never find answers in that way. Pastor Timothy Keller said this: Jesus didn't come to tell us the answers to the questions of life. He came to be the answer. Verse 24, a second time, see, they will not let up. They will not give up. A second time, they summoned the man who had been blind. Give glory to God by telling the truth, as if he hadn't been already. Give glory to God by telling the truth. We know this man is a sinner. Ironically, the Pharisees had passed judgment without ever understanding the issue. I don't need to understand the issue. I'm just going to pass judgment. And instead, they evaluated Jesus based on their limited understanding. Now, interestingly, the blind man had a limited understanding as well. He's been blind his whole life. He doesn't even know who Jesus is at this point. He was blind when he met Jesus. He knows his voice, but he hasn't seen him. He has limited understanding. But notice his response, verse 25. He replied, "Whether he is a sinner, I don't know. There's only one thing I do know. I was blind, and now I see. I don't know how any of this works," he said. "There's a lot I don't know. But there is one thing I do know that counters everything else that I know, and that's I was blind, but after encountering this man Jesus, I am different. I am different." Verse 26, and then they asked him, "What did he do to you? How did he open your eyes?" Verse 27, he answered, "I have told you already, and you did not listen." You didn't listen. No wonder Jesus referred himself as the light of the world. I think this is fantastic because the answer is as bright as day. It's as bright as day. But how often are we like the Pharisees when we don't like the answer or we don't agree with the answer and we'll just retreat to our old standby of finding faith? This isn't about me. Don't judge me. This is about this. And we push back. Verse 28, then they hurled insults at him, see, and said, "You are this fellow's disciple. We are disciples of Moses. We know that God spoke to Moses, but as for this fellow, we don't even know where he comes from." In other words, we know what God would do. We know what God wouldn't do. We know what God should do. And this doesn't fit our traditions. This doesn't fit our paradigm. This doesn't fit our way of seeing God. And we can't offer a better explanation, but that's no matter. We don't see our job as offering answers. Our job is finding fault. Lucky you. Isn't it interesting how some people pick up that job? My job is finding fault. But I love the blind man's answer. Verse 30, he answered, "Now that is remarkable. You don't know where he comes from, and yet he opened my eyes. We know that God did not listen to sinners. He listens to the godly person who does his will. Nobody has ever heard of opening the eyes of a man born blind. If this man were not from God, he could do nothing." He's saying, "I don't know if God acts this way. I don't know why he acts this way. I'm not interested in finding fault. I can't explain it, but you know what? I can't deny it." And so, of course, they try to have the last say, verse 34. To this they replied, "You were steeped in sin at birth. How dare you lecture us?" And they threw him out. There's the ultimate destination of that slow burn where we refuse to wrestle with the tension between the unexplainable and the undeniable. We simply hurl accusations. We push back. We cast people out. We shut down the conversation thinking that we won. But they didn't win. This poor old blind man, never had a job, never had a future, never had any hope, but suddenly in this moment, suddenly the blind man comes out on top. There's an old proverb that says, "In the realm of the blind, the man with one eye is king." You don't have to see everything. You don't have to see everything and understand everything to be ahead of the game from those that refuse to believe in anything. Wise people don't play the blame game. Wise people simply choose the undeniable over the unexplainable. Verse 35, Jesus heard that they had thrown him out, and when he found him, he said, "Do you believe in the Son of God?" Simple question. John Chrysostom, the early church father, put it this way. The Jews cast him out of the temple. They thought they had won. The funny thing is, the Lord of the temple found him. Where the ones who felt that their role was to find fault cast him out of the temple, thinking they had won. The funny thing is, they were in an empty place, an empty dark place, all alone. And on the outside, this man finds the Lord of the temple. And he asked the question, and in his response, the blind man was like, "Who is he, sir? Tell me so that I can get all my questions answered. Tell me so that he can explain some things to me. Tell me so I can tell him what I think. No, tell me so that I may believe in him." He never asked questions of Jesus like, "What took you so long? Why did you make me blind in the first place? Shouldn't you have protected me from being kicked out of the synagogue? Is that how you reward my faith?" Instead, he simply asked, "Just tell me who he is. Tell me who the Son of Man is. Tell me who God is." And Jesus said, "You have now seen him. In fact, he is the one speaking with you." And the man said, "Lord, I believe. Lord, I believe." And he worshiped him. He chose the undeniable over the unexplainable. He decided, "No, I'm not going to play the blame game. I'm not going to try to find fault. I am going to find," and he did find, faith. Now, as I looked at this passage, I really wondered why he didn't have any doubts or why he didn't express any doubts. I mean, don't you ever have doubts? I do. In the circumstances and situations of my life, there's a lot of doubts. There's a lot of things that I can't explain. There's a lot of things I don't understand. Boy, I preach and teach things that I go home and scratch my head and say, "I hope nobody asked me a question about that one." See, I doubt when I get laser focused on what's missing rather than what's in front of me. I doubt when God doesn't act the way I think he should act. I doubt when God lets things happen that I wouldn't let happen. I doubt when God doesn't answer a prayer. But in our doubts, we have to come to a realization that while there are limits to our understanding about Jesus, there are also plenty of undeniable truths about Jesus as well. And when I shift from finding fault to finding faith, and when I shift from trying to define who Jesus is and dictating what Jesus should do, and I shift to discovering who Jesus really is, and I discover who Jesus, what Jesus did, and I discover what Jesus has said about his life, his ability, his promises, and my life as well. When I choose to shift and discover what Jesus has said, my faith soars. Where I stop trying to define God's identity, and I trust in what he said about his identity. I'm going to invite the worship team back to the platform for these last few minutes. And I want to invite you to look at your life and the struggles that you face. And how are you doing with how you see God? You know, every single one of us is going to face times where we struggle with our faith, and that's okay. Every single one of us is going to find times where things don't make sense. And you're going to find times where you're going to ask that question, "Why me?" And can I be honest? You may not get an answer. And you're going to be tempted to try to numb the pain any way you know how. And maybe that's exploring other faiths. Maybe that's just pulling back and saying, "You know what? I'm not ready to make a solid decision about whether or not to follow Jesus, but I'm just going to play neutral." Can I tell you, there's no such thing as neutral. And that's a dangerous position to be in for a long time, because it's a slow burn to the point where you get so comfortable that nothing anyone says about Jesus is going to make any difference. Let me give you one last story. A pastor talked about a boy in his congregation who had shattered his back falling down the stairs at the age of one, consequently living his whole life in and out of hospitals. And when interviewed at church, the boy remarked, "God is fair." The pastor asked him, "How old are you?" He answered, 17. How many years have you spent in the hospital? 13. And the pastor asked, do you think that's fair? The boy's response, God's got all of eternity to make it up to me. If anyone had the excuse to find fault, it was this young man. But he chose to look at who Jesus said he is. And he chose to believe in what Jesus said he was going to do. I go to prepare a place for you so that where I am, someday you may be with me. A place that without weeping, without pain, and without sorrow, where everything that you'll receive will make up more than what you felt like you missed out on in this life. God has got all of eternity to make it up to you. So my question to you today is, are you going to spend your life finding fault? Or are you going to spend your life having found a growing faith in Jesus Christ? That's the question you've got to ask. That's the question you've got to ask. In light of the unexplainable, will you lean into what is absolutely undeniable about who Jesus is?
Thanks again for listening to this week's edition of the Portland Christian Center podcast. If you want more information about the ministries of Portland Christian Center or have a prayer need, please visit us online at pcctoday.com. Thanks for listening.